We are back. It's Lions Collective, back with another episode previewing Lions Rams. I'm your host from Crunch Time Sports, Jeff Iafredi. We got Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, The Athletic's Colton Pouncey, and 97.1 The Ticket's own Will Burgfield, not in his vehicle in the middle of a rainstorm. The man is still in Allen Park, but we are all here. We had news drop before Michigan football news, but we're going to talk Lions, Rams. A lot of storylines coming from it. Injuries, obviously the offense. We're going to talk about the defense and just match it up with the Rams team in which, you know, the reality is they are underdogs by about 5.5 points. So basically a touchdown here. But how are we doing today, fellas?
Busy. I think that probably describes it. I'm looking at the suggested show rundown as we were going through the intro. seeing what we're talking about today. It's good. It's good. It's one of those days.
I'm doing a lot better than Michigan football, that's for sure.
Yeah. Someone had to say it.
Yeah.
I'm
just happy to be in a warm space this week with lights on that won't go off throughout the course of the show. Dude, I was on Jeremy Reisman's the Pride of Detroit podcast this past week for the fundraiser. I think you guys were on it too. We all did like little 20-minute segments, and I had to do that one from my car too, just based on the way my Saturday was arranged. And I saw someone in the comments be like, does Bershie just strictly stream in his car now? And then I actually did crack a beer because I had my car parked and someone was like, dude, take the keys out of the ignition. So if that person who commented is also watching this show, let it be known I had parked my car and I was going home after that, walking home after that, and I had some dog and pony show beers in my trunk, so I'm not gonna not drink those.
Yeah.
This is terrible for legal advice podcast.
As long as the key's out of the ignition, that's what I was told.
I don't think so.
Weirdly enough, don't test that. Don't test it, but this is information I may or may not have Googled in the past. This is really so based on the internet, Justin, I believe Will Burchfield is correct. But that's on the internet, not legal advice.
You guys are living your life by Google AI results. Fantastic.
that's how we roll, baby. That's how we roll. You know what? I got to say this, too, just to mention at the start of the show, last week's jinx works. All right. All of the boys picked the Cowboys. Yeah.
What did we say?
And it worked. So we'll see what the theme is for this show, Lions Rams. It's obviously a bigger matchup. It's an important game, but you saw last week, offense just not only they arrived, they pulled in and kicked the door down. I mean, they were incredible. Jahmyr Gibbs, I think he tied Barry Sanders for the most touchdowns under before turning 24 years old. You had Amon-Ra St. Brown playing on basically one ankle, and he had basically 100 yards. J-Mo had 100 yards. Isaac Tesla's making plays. Just looking at that game offensively, that was a defense that was playing really good football after the bye week. That was also a defense that, after the trade of Quinnen Williams, they were able to get great pressure on quarterbacks. It was a clear matchup advantage for the Cowboys, a struggling interior offensive line, a very good interior defensive line. And after maybe some first quarter stuff, they ended up figuring some things out there, and they had Miles Frazier and Tristan Colon, but just kind of as an offense as a whole, what'd you guys take away from last week's game against the Cowboys, last week's win?
I've been saying this since the game. I think it was the best coaching performance for the Lions all season. And I'm talking from game plan to in-game decisions to adjustments. I thought the coaches on both sides of the ball handled it really well. And since we're starting with the offense, let's talk about the game plan. They came out, they knew the Cowboys were playing pretty good run defense with those two monsters on the inside, really kind of leading the charge. And they said, look, we're gonna put this game on Goff. It's not the first time they did it, but they used the pass to set up the run. And I always appreciate when a coaching staff is flexible to maybe their schematic preferences or the way they like to dictate a game flow. If they're willing to flip that on the head, I think it's just a sign of really great coaching. I thought the offense benefited weirdly from St. Brown being out, not just for three quarters of the previous game, but also the full week of practice. I think it really put a lot on the plate of both Jamison Williams and Isaac Tesla to step up. And really, that's something I think we're going to see going forward, is just the benefits of that extra practice time, that extra responsibility for those guys. And it, it really led to, I think, really the best and most complete offensive performance because that pass was successful and it did set up timely runs throughout the contest.
Yeah, what stands out to me is how much you hear coaches, whether it was Dan after the game or even Scotty Montgomery and guys today, saying how much they challenge their own players to play better, to be better. They know they have it in them, and they haven't kind of shown that consistency from week to week this year. And that was a game where you lose that one, your playoff odds drop from 30% to 12%, something like that, depending on what site you look at, you're looking at. So that was a big one that they needed, and I thought their best players stepped up when they needed them to. And I thought they played complimentary football. The offense was picking things up for the defense when the defense kind of gave up some yards and some touchdowns and vice versa. You get the turnovers defensively. And I agree, Justin, like that was Dan saying he put that on Jared Goff. That stood out to me because they've done that in the past where they want to use the pass to set up the run. They did it against Tampa last year. One of their two losses in the regular season did not work as well. But normally when they have that sort of split where it's like 60-40 pass run, doesn't really work out. That's usually a script that means you're playing from behind and having to play catch up. Not really what you want with Jared Goff, but they put that on his shoulders. And I thought he did a great job kind of distributing the ball to different playmakers. It wasn't just a one-sided, oh, you know, Saints going to have 140 yards. It was, you know, 92 for him, 96 for J-Mo, 77 for Gibbs. Tassau has a touchdown. So I thought the balance and distribution in the passing game was beautiful to see. And then defensively, the turnovers. And it wasn't a perfect performance, but being able to do what they did and creating those turnovers, which is something that they've been preaching for a while, and they thought it was going to come, and it finally came to get three of them in that game. So complimentary football at a time where you needed to lean on your stars, you challenged them to be better, and they came through for you.
Yeah, that was a season-saving win, no doubt. If they lost that game, I was ready to say they were cooked. I don't know how they would have realistically made the playoffs after that. And that was a win that spoke to the spine of this team and its ability to bounce back when most outside observers, us included, were beginning to count them out. And I love the fact that not only did they use the pass to set up the run, but while doing that, they didn't diminish the role of their lead running back, who also happens to be their most explosive, dynamic offensive player, because they used him in the pass game as much as almost anyone in that game. And we've heard for really 3 years now, ever since Jahmyr Gibbs showed up, that he is this explosive, multi-phase, positionless weapon. And with Sam Laporta now down and there's a clear void developing from a pass catching perspective at the tight end position, Jahmyr Gibbs is stepping into some of those targets, into some of those routes. And the vision for Gibbs really came to life from a pass catching standpoint in that win over the Cowboys. And they used him out wide. They used him in the slot. They threw to him when he would sell play action fakes. He caught really 8 passes because the first pass he caught, which was like a swing pass in the flat, was a backward pass and went down as a run. But it was his first touch of the night, and he caught a block from Taylor Decker and turned it upfield for like a 20-yard gain on third down. And then the very next play was when he put Kenneth Murray on skates when he caught a pass over the middle and then spun out of a tackle from a safety for a 26-yard game. And you look at the box score at the end of the night, and you're like, oh, he only rushed for 43 yards. But he had 77 yards through the air, and the Cowboys never really had an answer for him. I thought, speaking to the game plan and the coaching acumen, they clearly wanted to attack the Cowboys linebackers in space, in particular with Gibbs, their most unguardable player in situations like that. And anytime he got a linebacker one-on-one, and even sometimes when he got cornerbacks one-on-one, he won those matchups. And obviously the 3 touchdowns on the ground for Gibbs stands out, but we can get into it more as we proceed here. But the way that they weaponized him through the air, I think was really refreshing for a lot of us to see after hearing so much about it, especially entering this season.
Are we open to a tangent, gentlemen?
Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead. Fire away.
So I've been thinking about it this week. We've talked about it, the next wave of contract extensions that are due. And, you know, obviously 2 of those players have since been injured, unfortunately, with Brian Branch and Sam Laporta. But I think we've all kind of agreed all along that Gibbs is priority 1A, 1B, however you want to label that. And so you start thinking about what is it going to cost to keep this guy now, because I think the league has gone cyclical with value of running backs, right? Like, they didn't value him for a while, now suddenly the top teams have valued him again with Barkley and Henry and McCaffrey. And, you know, I've been looking at kind of just average value of these contracts. I think Barkley's leading the way with a little over 20 million. Gibbs plays a little bit less, has a little bit fewer touches than those guys, but obviously every single time he touches the ball, like you're waiting for the fireworks. Like, are we looking at a $20 million a year player? Is he going to get Barkley money, you think, next season?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No question. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, given his age and, you know, obviously the Lions try to take care of their own earlier than the market. And you got a guy in his own draft class that's probably going to get paid too, in Bijan Robinson. So I would imagine they try to get something done sooner rather than later with him. And to kind of keep those running back contracts from inflating, probably want to be on the earlier end of that. So, yeah, I mean, they obviously love the guy. When they drafted him, Brad called him, what, offensive weapon. And we're seeing that come to fruition. Not that he wasn't in past years, but really, really this year. You're kind of seeing his receiving game uptick, the way they kind of view him as this indispensable player. And it's like Dan said on 97.1 when asked about Dave Montgomery's touches. It's like, you're going to take that away from someone else? Like, you can't take it away from Gibbs at this point. Like, he needs those consistent touches. He's that good. And if he's that, you know, indispensable to your offense, then you got to find a way to keep him. And if it costs $20 million, then you do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought Jared Goff said something pretty interesting this week, also on the 97.1 airwaves, when he was talking about Gibbs and his growth in particular as a pass catcher. He was like, you know, his route tree just continues to grow. You know, I felt like in years past, we were really just throwing him the ball with traditional running back routes out of the backfield, a bit like some of the routes that I just described that he ran early in the game on Thursday. But now it feels like, you know, he's someone, and these are Jared's words, that like we can really spread him out and throw to in a variety of different ways. And Jared went so far as to say that like Gibbs might take this position to a place the league has never seen before. And, you know, we should probably pump the brakes there a little bit, because I think Christian McCaffrey already is there. Like, he probably is the current version of the way the Lions can use Gibbs. But when you ask around this building, the coaching staff in particular, they all reiterate that like there just isn't a ceiling on this player. And when that's the case, it's hard to put a ceiling on his contractual value too. Even if, say, the top of the running back market is set at $20 million a year, I think we could expect that Gibbs might even exceed that.
Yeah, I think you start looking and comps, you know, what are the comps for this guy? And, you know, maybe it ends up being Marshall Faulk. You know, I mean, a guy that was, I don't know if he was first ballot Hall of Famer, but pretty damn quick into the Hall of Fame one way or the other. And, you know, four straight 2,000 plus yards from scrimmage, boatload of touchdowns. Nobody's obviously scoring at Gibbs's pace, at certainly not at his age. And, you know, we'd probably find it hard to find many guys that have done it in league history, period. But, you know, that's the type of player I start thinking, or maybe even, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson too, like a guy that's just so dynamic as a pass catcher on top of being a dynamic ball carrier. I think there's still a lot of room to grow for Gibbs as a pass catcher. He took a big leap last year. I don't know if the production is at the same level this year, but he's doing a little bit more from a route tree perspective, from an alignment perspective. And so, you know, I think there's some more bites to the apple to be taken there. But, you know, the ceiling really, it's really tough to figure out what it is.
It's interesting you bring up Marshall Faulk. And after I brought up McCaffrey, those are two of the only three running backs in NFL history who have ran for and caught 1,000 yards in the same season. And if you remember, like 2 or 3 years ago, I think in Deuce Staley's first or second season here as running backs coach, he challenged DeAndre Swift to be the fourth member of that group. And I think a lot of us said, all right, yeah, I mean, that's a nice thought, but that's realistically not going to happen. With Gibbs, it could. If they continue using him the way they have used him really since Dan Campbell started calling plays 5 games ago, That is a mark that he could actually attain. And just while we're on Gibbs, I was looking at some of the receiving numbers and splits this week, and there has been a noticeable shift in the way they have used him since Dan took over play calling 5 games ago. He lined up as many times in the slot last Thursday against the Cowboys as he had in the first 8 games combined with John Morton calling plays. He lined up four times in the slot total through 8 games, which ran so counter to everything we had heard about him, especially from Morton himself in training camp. And It's up to 17 times with Dan calling plays. They've also used him out wide more. There was one play last week where he started out wide and then Jared motioned him into the slot between Tesla and St. Brown. And he ended up, I think, on a linebacker and cooked him because he's always going to cook a linebacker in that matchup. And he even ran a route out of the slot against Deron Bland, who's like a very accomplished cornerback in the NFL. And that was the out route that he ran to the sideline where he then broke Bland's ankles and left him on his stomach as he scampered upfield for the first down. And then the other shift that has taken place in the five games with Campbell calling plays is that they're just asking Gibbs to pass protect a lot less. And those numbers are skewed a little bit by the fact that he had to pass block 15 times in that debacle against the Vikings, but also probably not a coincidence that it was the very next game in which Campbell took over as play caller. And Gibbs's rate of pass blocking snaps has been shaved in half since Campbell took over play calling from John Morton. So I think we're seeing Campbell's effect in particular on the way they use Gibbs as a pass catching weapon.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of flack for my running back takes. I think running back is, and you guys know it, watching the NFL, it's one of the more replaceable positions, especially, you know, when you draft guys in the first round. And you know, the Brad Holmes got a lot of flack for it. He's in it, but I think Jahmyr Gibbs is the exception. There are always exceptions to the rule, especially if you're a versatile back. If you're someone who could put up potentially 1,000 yards receiving, you have every argument going in your favor, like Christian McCaffrey's of the world. I mean, unless you're Derrick Henry, who's just a freak athlete, he's like the exception. You pay him because he's just never hurt. But that's the thing with Jahmyr Gibbs. I think the thing that doesn't get talked about enough is he's always healthy. You know, he played in 15 games his rookie year, 17 games last year. He's on track to play, you know, the whole season this year. So I think that's the underrated part of Jahmyr Gibbs. And I think that also has to do with having someone like Dave Montgomery. I know someone commented in the chat, kind of keeping Jahmyr Gibbs fresh. But I think it's a good thing you're using him more. I mean, he's earning every single penny he's going to earn. And even for me, who, again, in the past with running backs, it's like, it's probably a position you can replace. That dude has talent that's not easy to replace. He is one of the more electric players in the entire NFL. So, yes, I think he can be an 1,000-yard receiver if utilized correctly. I'm glad Dan's finally kind of opening that up a little bit. I think the big conversation from that game as well, and it's something that we talked about last week, was the defense. And obviously – you know, the points per game and the yards and stuff like that is not great in terms of the number, but sacks, they were able to get after Dak, force turnovers, the forced fumbles, the interceptions, they were able to be very opportunistic. AQM had 3 sacks last Thursday. So every other game, AQM just decides to be Lawrence Taylor, and I freaking love it. Guy just decides to go crazy, bonkers. And they've praised him a lot. What's kind of been your guys' takeaway? What is your guys' takeaway from that game? I know they lacked in it the last couple of weeks. And then kind of moving forward this week, because I think the defensive line this week is going to be a unit you kind of depend on for a highly efficient passing attack from the Rams here. You confident in the pass rush, or you think there's still maybe some reason to be a little skeptical?
Look, we bombed in our game predictions last week. I acknowledge that. I think we all acknowledge that. We nailed the Muhammad element of it, right? Like, we talked about the schematic changes that were coming and what they might be, and he always made the most sense to get more reps out there to maximize on his, what do you call it, splash plays, Colton? Was that what we were talking about last week? Splash [S2] Yep. [S1] Play potential, right? And so he had played 15 or fewer snaps in 3 of the last 4 games. He played 36 on the edge in this game. And when I talked about earlier about coaching decisions and adjustments, he wasn't playing a ton early in the game. It was more of Davenport. And as Muhammad kind of started flashing, they just fed him more and more and more, and it built up and built up and built up. And I think that the key to last week, and this goes back to, I believe, the point Colton made earlier, that they were challenged by the coaching staff to step up. And that challenge to the defense was win your damn one-on-ones. Yeah. Like, come on. We're scheming these up for you to get one-on-ones. Hutch is taking on 14 dudes, so you've got -3 dudes to worry about. Like, win the one-on-ones. And if you go back and you look at the tape of this game, Davenport, McNeil, Tyleek Williams, DJ Reader, Jack Campbell, like when they got put in one-on-one situations, they won. it wasn't a great pass rush performance. It really wasn't. But instead of turning sacks to pressures, as Will liked to call it last week, those pressures were sacks this week because they won the one-on-ones and they won them quickly and they finished when they had their opportunities. And it was impressive. And that goes also for the takeaways as well.
Colton, show everyone what you were doing every time Muhammad made a play. Because Colton sits between J-Raj and myself in the press box. And every time Muhammad had a sack last night, show the people what you were doing.
Got you. I lean back so I could see Birchie in the row over. And I'd be like, splash, splash play.
Splash. Nothing but net.
But it was, I mean, that's exactly what they needed to do, right? Like Shep put it, you know, kind of bluntly, like, no shit, we need to win our one-on-ones. Like any coach can say that, but it was true. And, you know, I appreciate Shep for kind of putting that on him and saying, look, I need to coach better if it's not working. But it really came down to players. And I do agree with Jeff. I think they were putting them in situations to win, but they needed to go out and do it. And I think putting Al-Qadi Muhammad on the field and saying, hey, we're going to win by rushing four. We're not going to blitz a whole lot. That was one of their lower blitz rates of the season, I believe. So they're like, they really put that on their front four and said, you guys are going to win against this offensive line. We need you guys to win. This is how we're going to win this game. And they really came through for them. Like Al-Qadi Muhammad had the three sacks. The pressure was affecting throws. You had three turnovers as a result. So it was really cool to see the rushing coverage come together in ways that we haven't seen in a little bit. And that was always going to be a key to this game where, you know, a guy like Dak Prescott, if you give him time back there, he's going to cover your defense. And he still did it. He still had a lot of passing yards. But imagine if that pressure wasn't there. He would have had all day back there to throw. Probably would have had a lot more points on the board. You might lose that game 45-44 if he has a few more of those completions. So, yeah, I mean, that group was challenged. And Al-Qadi Muhammad said that after the game. He was not shying away from that. But they gave him more of an opportunity, and he came through. So good on this pass rush for getting it done. And good on those guys for creating those splash plays.
Dude, who had Al-Qadi Muhammad leading this team in sacks with a half more than Aiden Hutchinson? With four?
Not Hutch.
Not Hutch. Definitely not. But no one. I mean, it's staggering. Well-deserved NFC Defensive Player of the Week award for Al-Qadi Muhammad. You know, when we start to ask, is that sustainable? Can they take what they did against the Cowboys and translate it to the Rams game and moving forward? The one thing that gives me faith is something that Aiden said after the game, which spoke to not like a schematic change or a personnel change, but a philosophical change. He was like, the coaching staff took the reins off the defensive line this week. And when I asked him what he meant by that, he was like, we rushed with a pass first mentality, even when it might be a run. He felt like they had really been getting carved up on those heavy protection play action throws where they weren't transitioning quickly enough from run to pass. And so the defensive line, and especially those edge guys, he and Muhammad together with the coaching staff's blessing, just tore after the ball last week. Like it was going to be a pass on almost every play. And it really helped Muhammad get home a couple times, and it helped Hutch rack up 9 pressures, which actually looked like legitimate pressures this week, not just like coverage pressures. And you know, that's how it seems like they want to rush for the rest of the year. And when I was talking with Jack Campbell about it today, I asked him, you know, how does your job change when you know they're going to rush more aggressively? And he was like, well, like, I mean, it obviously creates a few more gaps in the run game that weren't there previously, but it's on us as linebackers to come downhill and basically put out those fires when they have to. And I think that philosophical change is as much a statement about Jack Campbell as anyone. Like they knew they could release those guys on the edge because they have maybe the single best run defending linebacker in the NFL who could come down and solve problems if and when they arose. And it was funny talking with Jack about it. He was explaining how, you know, early on the season and really up until last week, anytime the defensive line had stunt set up or pick plays or like different ways to get after the passer, and Campbell would sense run before the snap, he would immediately kill those plays because he calls himself kind of more of a conservative linebacker and make sure all those guys up front were in their run fits. And he was like, this week they were like, nah, dude, screw that. We're going after the passer. Like we're going after the passer. And so he's like, all right, I'll fall in line with you guys. He literally said, I was like, oh, so like they were actually killing it back to you. And he was like, nah, he goes, they said to him, you're done making that decision. We want to go rush the passer. And I know Hutch said like, we kind of want to play that way the rest of the season. So that should give the defense maybe some faith that they can replicate to a certain degree the pressure they mounted last week.
It is interesting to me. So like a couple things they did really well. One, they took away George Pickens. You know, you couldn't take away both. I thought some of the stuff with CeeDee Lamb, the yak catches, that's correctable, but they took away George Pickens. So you took away one or two really good. You shut down the run pretty well. And like you mentioned, they did it with less resources. I think it is interesting. Jack Campbell had 5 missed tackles in this game, according to PFF.
Yeah, he didn't love his performance.
I don't know if it was quite 5 based on my own viewing, but like there were certainly plays he didn't make that he normally does, yet all 11 were committed to it. So even when he missed a tackle, Brian Branch was there, Avante Maddox was there, Derek Barnes was there, Alexander Lou. There was no big breakout runs. I think 11 or 12 yards was the longest run. 12 might have been a scramble when Hutchinson slipped. So they did a lot of really good things defensively beyond rush the passer, you know, and when you have two receivers like that, like taking away one is not a bad thing. And it obviously ports over to this week, right? They're going to have two more with Puka and Davante Adams, right? Like you're going to have to find a way to take away at least one of them.
No, I think I know people in the chat are kind of talking about Jack Campbell as well. I think Jack Campbell, I mean, can we agree? He's an all pro, no question. Right. I mean, he's earned it. And he's the next guy, honestly, on the draft class we were talking about earlier. Talk about top paid at their position. Jack Campbell's going to get a shit ton of money. I don't know what was the top linebacker. I think it's Roquan. He's making close. I think he might be making $20 million.
Everybody gets Roquan $20 million.
Roquan or Fred?
Yeah. One of them, yeah. Everybody. I mean, honestly, it's about $20 million for both, even the players. Like, I mean, Brian Branch, I mean, no, he had the Achilles injury, which I guess we didn't really talk about yet, to be honest with you, too. Like, Brian Branch went down with an Achilles injury. At first, just watching the game, you knew, I mean, Brian Branch is one of the toughest guys. I mean, when he was down and he wasn't getting up, you knew it was something more serious. You couldn't tell. It's usually all those Achilles injuries are. You couldn't tell by watching just the play in which it happened. But then it was reported it was a torn Achilles. Kirby Joseph's already kind of dealing with that knee injury that he's hopefully will come back from very soon. But Brian Branch, one of the better players on defense. What's, I guess, the short-term negative of not having Brian Branch for the season, and how does this kind of affect the defense going forward? Because he might have not a full legion of whom, but it might be like a half legion of whom. It might be like a legion of whom with the safety group, at least if Kirby can't go this week. And Thomas Harper.
I feel like Will's most in mourning over the Brian Branch loss. So you should take this one first, buddy.
No, you know what? I think that the way that injury happened suggested that it was probably inevitable. I mean, I don't want to play doctor here, but it seemed like a pretty routine fall where he ends up rupturing the Achilles. You know, I know he'd been playing with a injured ankle for a while now. And I wonder if he was veering toward an injury like that this season, one way or the other. But it's obviously crippling, especially if Kirby remains sidelined. That's the other part of this conversation. Like, Kirby practiced today. Is he going to practice tomorrow? Because he practiced last week and then he was downgraded to out the following 2 days. So they need to get him back on the field. I know certain sections of the fan base haven't loved Branch's play this year. It's probably simply because he hasn't had the ball production he had last year. He's still one of the most valuable members of this defense. And the other piece of this conversation is getting Thomas Harper back as well, because I thought Thomas Harper had been playing really well in Kirby's place. And I thought Maddox played well when he came on last week.
No doubt.
A long way of saying they will definitely miss Brian Branch. And it puts Brian Branch and the Lions in kind of an uncomfortable spot next season, because even if he can come back and play, he won't likely be back until probably sometime around now, maybe a little earlier if you're fortunate, and that's his contract season. With Kirby's uncertainty moving forward and Brian Branch entering a contract year where he won't have played football for almost a full season, it's going to make for some interesting decisions and an interesting negotiation with Branch after next year.
I think of Tracy Walker as maybe the comp here, right? So Walker suffered Achilles injury week 4 and was back out there for the start of training camp. And so obviously we're talking 2 months, but you might be able to see Branch a month, month and a half into the season if, you know, these recovery timetables like just wide. Keep getting better and better and better. I think Adrian Peterson came back from an Achilles injury in like 3 weeks. I heard a story today in a locker room that Frank Ragnow had a meniscus scope after the season and played in the playoffs 1 week after a scope on his meniscus. So like, it's, you know, I obviously like Branch should be and will be as precautious as possible going into a contract year, but I would not be surprised to see him at midseason. I really wouldn't. The safety situation is fascinating. Obviously you get Kirby back. Great. Perfect. Awesome. He's starting off this week of practice. That's promising. Campbell said he wants to see multiple practices in a row. Obviously understandable. Let's see where that goes. Harper being back out there this week, or at least to start the week, is encouraging. And I agree, Phil. Maddox played really, really well.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why you sign those veterans with experience and versatility. Where they go from here with the other 45 options they have on the roster should be super interesting. I think, you know, it's a question I have for Calvin Shepard this week. You have Jalen Mills, you claimed off waivers this week. You have Casey, who you know signed to the practice squad that has a boatload of interceptions. You've got Strickland and Daniel Thomas and Eric Hallett, all these guys that are on the roster in some way, shape, or form that have at least some defensive reps for you that have been in the system. And so how do you rotate them in practice to determine what's your best option? Like, what's the process going forward here, whether that's option two as a starter this week or three, four, five on the depth chart? You know, they've got a lot to sort out, but I think the thing that's lost most with Branch is just his impact coming downhill. Like, he's just got such great instincts in playing the screen game and playing the quick passes in the perimeter, in playing the run that so few safeties have. And he played so much bigger than his, he always played so much bigger than his size. I feel like the roster really kind of lacks that obvious one-to-one replacement there in terms of just wrecking things from a downhill, attacking gaps in the run game. I think that's where you're going to feel his absence more than anywhere else.
I do feel like it's worth pointing out the job the Lions have done in preparing for injuries in the secondary and like building that depth up, because they obviously, I think they're kind of scarred with what they went through last year, understandably so. And so they really tried to address depth this offseason. And the fact that they do have Arak Yassin, you know, Meek, obviously they signed a couple years ago, but the fact that he's been able to be out there, you know, Vontae Maddox stepping up, Thomas Harper finding him right before the season. Like, they've really done a good job at that secondary position in particular in preparing for moments like this. But obviously it's hurtful. You know, it hurts you to lose a player like Branch, because he is so instinctive. He can cover like a cornerback. He can hit like a linebacker. He can blitz. He can do so much for you that like, he's sort of like three players in one on the field. And when you lose that, it hurts you elsewhere. So they're going to be in a little bit of a bind here. And I don't think we'll see the impact until, you know, those games start being played without him on the field. And you're like, yeah, Branch probably would have made that play. Or yeah, Branch would have made that tackle. He would have been right there, just because he's such a hard player to replace. And you talk about Kirby, he did practice today. They do want to see him get multiple practices in a row. I was told that if Kirby does come back, it's probably going to look like it did earlier in the season. Like, I don't know how fast this knee is progressing at this point in the year. Probably going to be until next season where he's looking like his full self, his, in that true Kirby form that we've come to expect from him. But I do think, even if it's, you know, 75% of what he can be, I still think that's a player that can help you. So if he's able to string some practice together and prove to the coaching staff that he can be trusted out on the field, I think he can still be effective. He can still play that center field role. And you can still have a guy on that side of the field that can make plays for you from the safety position. So if it's him and Thomas Harper, whenever he does come back, I still think that's a pretty good safety tandem duo that can kind of get you through the rest of the season. But obviously it's not Brian Branch or Kirby Joseph. So that's just kind of what they have to deal with right now.
Colton, sadly, the case for Brian Branch to finish second on the team in sacks will have to wait another
year.
Darn. We thought we had it back in camp. That was our bold prediction.
Really did.
2.5. He's fifth right now.
Hey,
so.
Shoot.
Was Hutchinson third in that prediction? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was actually. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, technically, we'll just say that take's incomplete. We won't say it was a bad take.
That's right.
It's just incomplete. He got hurt. Nothing you can do about it.
On the topic of safeties and the effect of losing star players. I think Kirby's absence brings it to light. Like, Thomas Harper has played really well, and you could argue he's played like one of the better starting free safeties in the NFL since having to step in for Kirby. And then you go and watch that Packers loss on Thanksgiving, and there are two plays that Harper either errs on or just isn't quite good enough on that Kirby likely erases. The touchdown throw to Wicks down the sideline where, you know, Harper made the mistake of trying to go for the interception instead of breaking up a pass. And then the 12 men on the field where he felt like he was responsible as a safety for not knowing how many cornerbacks were coming and going out of the rotation. Like, both or at least one of those plays with your all-pro safety on the field are probably remedied. And they aren't when you have a player who's just playing well. And so with Branch gone now, if it's Maddox who steps in there at strong safety, like, yeah, he is a very strong player, but in this game of inches and semi-seconds, those are the margins you're losing when you lose star players.
Now, I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. You'll hear from our friends over at Sleeper. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the secondary. We'll get into our X-Factor segment. We'll preview Lions-Rams. But first, got to hear about our friends over at Sleeper. We'll see you in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Sleeper. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, a proud sponsor of Lions Collective. They are a fantasy sports plus real money gambling gaming app focused on bringing people together through sports. You guys know Sleeper Fantasy, of course, one of the bigger fantasy apps in the game, but they also have Sleeper Picks, which is their real money product that connects friends over picks. Very simple. You choose 2 days of your favorite players. You can do it from pregame. You can do it live during the game, or you can do it across different sports, not just the NFL. You pick more or less than the predicted stats. You would have made a boatload of cash if you picked more on the AQM sacks. And you might be able to do it again this week. Who knows? Or actually do it next week. Do it the following week. But on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payout. Share with your friends. Get rewarded together. And shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the show as always. Now, we got more to get to. Like I said, Lions, Rams. We got our X Factor segment here. I want to make sure we give some love. Shout out to Dog and Pony Show Brewing as always. I'll be there Sunday. So if you're there for the game, come hang out with me.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. We're drinking some. We're getting loose. Okay. Yeah, Kyle's going to have his hands full.
Tell you Kyle that. Said you're coming in with the whole crew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're coming in there.
So who's rolling in?
It's all the Crunch Time boys. You know what I find? This is what makes Kyle so special. He texted me. He said, "You boys got $100 tab." I said, "Ooh. Kyle, you do realize what you're doing here. You know what I'm saying? $100 worth of beer. This could go two ways here. I could be in the back of a cop car or the other tab, or we can have a great time. It could go either way." So, Kyle, we appreciate you as always. Shout out to Kyle for sponsoring. But
you had to drop the podcast name just to get a dollar off to expand that a little bit.
Bro, Jeff's in the back of the cop car cracking a beer and saying, "Just take the keys out of the ignition, fellas. It's fine. I looked it up. Don't worry about it. It's fine."
Yeah, Google AI told me.
Google AI told my lawyer, my free lawyer. Shout out to Google AI. But yeah, so Lions Rams will be there Sunday, but just focused on the game itself here. The secondary facing some very good wide receivers. Devontae Adams and freaking Puka Nacua. Doesn't feel real sometimes. I mean, Devontae's 32, 33 years old. Does not look like it. He has double-digit touchdowns. You got Puka, who's an incredible player. I mean, Lions fans should know Puka. I mean, every time he play the Rams, guy's got 180 yards. So he's an incredible player. I find it hilarious, just side note. I love, and you guys know exactly what I'm talking about here. Jared Goff, I think this man cannot wait. He hates these Rams games, I think, internally, because he knows that he's going to be asked about the Rams, his Rams days. He lets you guys know. He's like, "Okay, dude, here we go."
He got asked twice about it today before he was like, "Oh, we're still talking about it.
Still on this?" Yes,
Jared, it's a major national storyline.
Yeah.
He was walking back to his locker with a PR member, and he was, you know, just chirping about it a little. I go, "Bro, I didn't even know you played for the Rams."
Oh, did you play there?
Sean McVay, you know the guy? Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny as hell. But yeah, so the secondary, they got a tough task this week, man. DJ Reed, he's kind of, you can tell DJ's kind of still getting his legs back under him. Kind of like, you know, I mean, it's pretty obvious. He's played much better. He didn't have his greatest game last week, but him and Amik are going to have a tough kind of tall task this week. What's kind of your guys' early thoughts on that matchup and your confidence that at least this defense, it's feeling like this could be one of those bend, don't break games to me? I don't know. It's going to be hard to keep this offense under 30 points, it feels like. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but this feels like a high-powered offense, and they don't have too many weaknesses, to be honest with you. They don't.
It's a super interesting matchup because the Rams, forever, we knew them as the 11 personnel team. Like, they never changed personnel, and it was unique in itself, all right? They were doing three wide receivers. They were playing the same group 85% of the time, and suddenly they're a 13 personnel team, and they're bucking the trend with all these tight ends. And, you know, that changes how you have to defend them. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of nickel defense this week. So that means probably a little bit less of Rocky Sin, which, you know, is a little interesting, right? Because he was a big part of shutting down or slowing down Pickens last week. But if I'm kind of envisioning how this matchup goes, you know, I think that you're probably going to see not sides, but shadowing with the corners. I think you're probably going to see a lot of DJ Reed on Adams. Kind of interesting that those guys practiced together quite a bit last year, kind of talked to Adams, or I'm sorry, talked to Reed about it this week. And he's like, yeah, I learned so much from him. And he really taught me a lot of his tricks. And I go, do you think that'll help you? He goes, yeah. He knows I know his tricks, so he's probably going to be doing something different. And it's such an honest, you know, opinion. Like, Adams is – people have been saying it since Darius Slay was here in, like, his second season. Like, Adams is the best releases in the league. Yeah. He just has a nightmare. It's why he's killing it in the red zone this year. But I think that Amik is usually better suited for the stronger, more physical receivers. Doesn't always work out in his favor, but he's a guy that fights. And so I think they'll probably stick him with Puka. Maybe Rock gets in there a little bit as well. And those matchups can be really interesting. But I'm going to be fascinated by how the safeties handle Stafford. I mean, that guy looks off safeties better than anybody in the league. And you get young, inexperienced eyes out there that are baited. That's a big problem that the Lions have to address this week.
Yeah, I think eye discipline is going to be key in this one, just knowing how Stafford plays the game and knowing his chemistry with these receivers. How quickly it's come with Devontae, too, has been unreal. I also think maybe this game defensively, I struggle to say this because they might just give up like 40. But like, I do think at least defensively, the way they're wired kind of matches up weirdly against the line, against the Rams. You look at Devontae Adams, you know, I think he has 14 receiving touchdowns. I want to say, of those 14, like 9 or something have come in within like the 5 or 10, something crazy like that, which is crazy to me. That's so many inside the 5. But the way the Lions play defense, if they want to go man and say, hey, strap them up, try to beat us. Like, you know, Jack Campbell said teams know it's coming and they still can't stop it. But they said that about the tush push. So the Lions just kind of strapped them up and stopped it. So if that's sort of the mindset and you required to beat these dudes, I think the Lions have some guys that can play that type of game. So that's kind of where my mind goes. And then you look at, Justin, you mentioned the 13 personnel. The Rams lead the NFL in 13 personnel rate at 21.4%. It is kind of stylistically different than what we're used to. Jordan Rodriguez, my coworker here at The Athletic, she's now a national writer. She used to cover the Rams. She had a Rams podcast called like 11 personnel, I believe, just because of how much they played it. They still do it, obviously, but the 13 personnel has been a nice wrinkle for them. But I do think the way the Lions play, I mean, they lead the league in 4-3 rate and just having three linebackers on the field around like 59-60% of the time. So I do feel like they'll probably stay in base and, you know, just again, just try to strap it up and, you know, see who wins. And again, I say that knowing how potent this Rams offense is and how many different ways they can beat you, but at least stylistically, there's so many games where the Lions just come to play. And that sounds like an easy thing. And we probably overthink it sometimes. But really, I look at that Philly game for this defense, which was a great game for them, not so much offensively, but for the defense. Aleem McNeil was like, it's really just a mindset. Like, other teams can try to replicate what we did against Philly, but they might not have the horses or they might not have the mentality. And I think that you could say the same thing about different aspects of this defense. And this feels like a game where they're going to need that mindset to overcome some of the talent deficiencies elsewhere.
I think it's really funny. Well, I'm just going to jump in really quick. The Lions are with like their fifth and sixth and seventh tight end.
Yeah.
The Rams, who, like you're talking about, have been playing three tight ends all year, lost their number one guy in Higbee. And what do? Oh, they plug in their top draft pick who wasn't being used. I mean, being used less than, you know, Tesla here. Terrence Ferguson, number 46 overall, was barely playing, has five catches on the season. Great. Now you plug him in and he's playing 46 reps. I mean, they're just so talent rich at that position. So it's just, it's coaching using the talent and modifying it. Like I said, it goes back to my very first point of the saying, great coaches modify to what they have.
Yeah. Jack Campbell, who was saying today, when he sees teams that play a lot of 13 personnel, he feels like they're trying to dictate terms for the defense. But to your point, Colton, the Lions already play on those terms. Like when teams run 13 personnel, they're basically trying to force you into playing base defense with three linebackers out there. And that's how the Lions have lived for most of the season. So Campbell, Jack was like, I really don't see this affecting us all that terribly. Again, it doesn't mean that the Rams won't succeed in those sets, but the Lions are comfortable anyways defending those. Quick trivia nugget for you guys. There are four wide receiving tandems in the NFL this season, both of whom rank in the top 25 for receiving yards on the year. Can you name the four tandems?
Dallas. AJ, Devontae, Puka, Devontae, Saint, J-Mo.
Philly?
Another NFC team that they've played.
Philly or Minnesota?
Philly, yeah. The NFC is loaded with elite receiving tandems. This will be the third the Lions have seen this season. They held up pretty darn well against Devonta and AJ. Probably
no doubt.
Credit Jalen Hurts for that as much as anyone. And I did think they did an awesome job last week on Pickens, and CD just kind of had a day against DJ Reed. DJ Reed still trying to find the flow that he was in when he got hurt, like weeks three, weeks four, when he locked up Zay Flowers and then locked up Jerry Jeudy. He was like, I was just feeling it, and said afterwards, like, he's still trying to find that level of confidence. Feels like he needs a few more practices and games under his belt to get back there. The Lions do have to find a way to get his mom to that game, because he was like, look, my mom was there for the Browns game when I had my first pick, and she was there last Thursday when I had my second pick. So we got to get Mrs. Reed after that game somehow. Maybe someone can give up like their spot on the team plane in the name of the greater good. But on Amik, dude, just stop jumping double moves. Like, just stop jumping double moves, and your numbers on the season would look so much better. He tried jumping the one against Jamar Chase late in that Cincy game because he was getting greedy for the second pick, and Chase houses like a 70-yard touchdown, and he tried jumping the one against Flournoy because he felt like the pass rush was firing all game long. In fact, kind of a credit to those guys up front. Amik was like, early on that game, when I can feel us getting home, I started playing with an internal clock in my head where after 3 to 4 seconds, jump everything. So he goes to jump that Flournoy route, looking for the pick, and he gets housed again. And all of a sudden, the numbers against him look really ugly. I didn't think Amik played that poorly. In fact, he had one of the biggest plays of the game on the pass breakup on Pickens that turned into the interception for Derek Barnes. It was Amik closing on that slant, getting the arm in, that turned that into a huge takeaway that kind of swung the game early second half. But those really glaring mistakes obviously are the ones that people know you for. And so just hopefully Amik, for his own sake, isn't trying to jump double moves against Puka on Sunday against LA. Because if he is, Stafford will have a field day.
Amik cracked me up in the locker room after the game. he was asked about it. Because, like, you know, people on Twitter were saying, oh, it's Brian Branch's fault. And he was like, no, it was me. He's like, this is what cracked me up. He goes, I got greedy again. I was like, the honesty that you're going to get from this guy is unmatched.
And then immediately was again. Yeah. And then immediately he's like, we just can't make the same mistake twice. I'm like, you made the same mistake twice.
As we're walking away, I can hear Will being like, bro, you got to stop jumping that shit.
He was like, I know.
He's like, these eyes.
Yeah.
I do think it is. It is positive that Reed ended the last game right on interception, but not only that, you know, I talked to him about it today. Like, you look at that play on film, it's super interesting. The Lions are in cover three, and what they do when they're in cover three and there's one guy isolated to one side, that guy becomes kind of a man coverage guy, at least through the first part of the play. It's just a schematic tweak or adjustment to how they play cover three. Well, what happens on that is Fournoy runs a deep dig across the field. Well, Reed sticks with him. You know, that pulls him out of his zone, but he's like, I'm sticking with this man coverage. I'm looking at the QB's eyes. And in reality, what he told me is, I was just really tired and wanted to get off the field.
Yeah.
And so, like, I realized that the only way that was going to happen is if I made a play. But it was a really advanced, important play for him to read the offense outside of maybe the schematic rules, to ad lib maybe just a little bit or expand the rules of what he was allowed to defensively to make that game sealing play. And so, you know, Reed said there is some positivity to maybe finishing a rough game on a high note. And so maybe that kind of springboards him here down the stretch.
Yeah. I should also know Amik also got bailed out by a poor throw by Dak down the left sideline. I think it was like late first half. CD had him beat pretty cleanly for what could have been another long touchdown. So the day could have looked different for Amik, but they have full faith in him. Like they won't back down from putting a lot on his plate because he wants it.
Now for the last 8 minutes here, I'm curious to know your guys' X factor player for the last stretch of the season here. You got 4 games left. What is it? Rams, Steelers, Vikings, Bears. Who is your X factor in order for the Lions to at least, I mean, there's different scenarios here, but at least try and win out. Who's your guys' X factor on offense or defense?
I'm going to make something up last minute. So Colton, go.
Ooh. I think this comes down to obviously if he's playing or not, but if Kirby Joseph can find a way to get back on the field, I think that would probably be my pick. They've missed a guy that can create turnovers consistently. They sort of come in bunches. I know that's turnovers in general, but he is a guy that can do that throughout the course of a season. And they've kind of missed him at times. And I know he won't be 100% if he does come back, but I do think that he can be healthy enough to make an impact defensively. And if you have at least one or two of those a game, I know it's maybe a lot to ask, but if you can get it done, give the ball back to your offense, give that offense more chances to score and more bites at the apple. It can really impact the game. So I would go with Kirby, but again, subject to change because I don't know how healthy that knee is right now.
I'm going to combine two players into one and say Miles Mahogany. The left guard spot has been a pretty clear weakness ever since Mahogany went down. I don't think Yody is a clear answer there this season. Tristan Colon, you know, plays well at times, but if they can either get Mahogany back to the level that he was at in certain games, or they can rely more on Frazier, maybe they can solidify the weakest point of their offensive line right now. I thought Frazier played pretty darn well in his first taste of NFL action last Thursday. I know that the PFF score was a little bit down on him, but you know, when he came in that first series, he did his job on every single play. He was never beat cleanly, and he capped it off by kind of clearing Odighizuwa, am I saying that name right? Close enough. Out of the way on Gibbs' touchdown plunge. And then he also had a really nice block on Gibbs' second touchdown, where he and Decker passed off blocks to each other, and it was pretty seamless. And I don't know, I'm not an expert on O-line play, but I think that's probably unique to see a rookie in his first NFL start really soundly passing off blocks to a veteran left tackle. So I was more encouraged than not by what Frazier brought. And maybe it is as simple as just plugging Mahogany back in there. But if not, I like the ceiling that Frazier might give them down the stretch.
Something I loved about Frazier was his ability to handle second level stuff. It's been a weakness for the Lions all season, or at least consistently. I thought he got to his second level assignments all day. The pass rush, the pass protection, it's got work to do, but look at Kenny Clark, Quinny Williams. I think most guys would struggle in their debut. Great reps for him to learn from, to learn how different NFL caliber, high-end NFL caliber is different than even the SEC, but you know, still great for him to get that taste to build on. I look at the defensive line for this answer, and look, we know what Aiden Hutchinson brings. We know what Aleem McNeil brings. I think Tyleek Williams and Roy Lopez and DJ Reed are doing a really great job in their roles. And I think Muhammad is going to, or has emphasized that he deserves the role he had in this last game. And I think he's going to continue to give those. Give me it, Colton, splash plays. Give me a little jumper motion.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Splash. So leaves one hole, and it's what is the other half of that rotation opposite Hutchinson? And so I think you know where I'm going with this. Marcus Davenport has to step up. And I saw glimpses of it. He played a much bigger, more complete role this last game. You saw the emphatic power that he can rush with. He had one pressure. And I don't know if he had any tackles, to be honest with you. I can't remember one. It needs to get to the point where he's taking the sacks to pressures to sacks to tackles for loss. We know the type of impact this player can have when he's clicking on all cylinders. I got the sense this week that it's close. Obviously, durability is forever going to be a question with him. Can he finish out strong? I think Davenport has the potential to really elevate this defensive line that is on the cusp of being pretty damn good, too good for the stretch run.
Yeah. I love it. I was going to do the Elquidine. I was going to do the Will route and go Elquidine Hutchinson combined name. Yeah. I think that's probably much. But I'll go DJ Reed. I mean, with him in the lineup, the Lions are 5-2. He hasn't looked like himself over the last, 2 weeks. But I think as the games kind of stack up, you're going to start to see the DJ Reed you saw at the beginning of the year. I mean, if you have a true number one corner who can limit number one wide receivers, I think that brings a big advantage to a defense right now that, again, they were opportunistic, but they were allowing a crap ton of yards. So having a guy who can prevent yards, receiving yards, certainly will help. So I'll go with DJ Reed here. So last 2 minutes, score predictions. Before we get out of here, again, the jinx worked last week. I'm going to try and replicate that again. I'll start. Okay. I'll be the ass. Okay. I'm just going to start it off. I got the Rams in this one. Sorry, guys. Got the Rams in this game. I'm going to go 30-24 Rams in this game.
I don't think there's any apology necessary, right? Like the Lions have been constantly up and down for the last month and a half. It's win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. For them to prove that they are the contender that they can be, it's time to start stringing them together. It's shit or get off the pot time. Like, now is the time. And so the Rams are, I imagine, a Super Bowl favorite, among the Super Bowl favorites, the best team in the NFC right now. They've got an MVP caliber quarterback. They've got two great receivers, a running game, a defense that's holding people an amazing front. Like, if you win this game, the Lions are back. They're back. Yeah. And I'm just not ready to go there. I'm not. And so, keep the reverse jinx alive. I don't care. I'm going to go 27-23. Rams.
There you go.
Go ahead, Bridget.
Nah, you go ahead, Colton. I'm still formulating my thoughts.
Me too. I mean, here's the thing. My mind tells me to continue the reverse jinx because I think the Rams are a really good football team, and the Lions just haven't shown the consistency to make me believe they can win a game like this.
Is there a butt coming here? Is there a butt coming?
But.
Oh.
I do think this team plays better with their backs against the wall. I really do. And like this, winning a game like this on the road against a team that they haven't beaten a team of this caliber all year. And they've struggled when they've played teams with good defensive lines and whatnot this year.
Yeah.
So I'm really going against what my mind tells me, and I might break the reverse jinx here, but I think they find a way to get it done, weirdly. And that's probably going to look stupid in like a week or not, but I'll go, 30-27.
I like it.
So if they lose, it's Colton's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've established that. So, yeah. Go ahead, Will.
This is the game of the year, man. I like that the Lions can counter the Rams' best attribute on defense, which is their edge rushers with really strong tackles. I think in some ways you can nullify what they do so well on defense. I just don't know if the Lions can say the same on the other side of the ball. I love DJ Reed and Amik Robertson. I don't love the look of the safety room right now against maybe the best receiving tandem in the NFL and against the quarterback who is having the best year of his career. I didn't realize until I actually looked at Stafford's numbers this week, how insane they are. Is it 35 touchdowns to four picks. He now leads.
It's because he's throwing to Adams in the red zone. Yeah. Every time he goes in there.
Yeah. Now leads the league in passer rating. I think there is too much firepower for the Lions to account for with such a banged up back end. So I'll try and, on behalf of all of our viewers, continue the reverse jinx. I'll say Rams 27, Lions 24. I do think Jared has another big day. I thought he was great last week. I thought, you know, we mentioned Miles Frazier and some of the issues in pass protection. Maybe his worst rep of the game was against Quinnen Williams late on that third down throw to J-Mo, where Quinnen kind of gets through and Jared has big, mean Quinnen Williams bearing down on him, and he stood tall in there and lofted that crosser to J-Mo for a huge third down conversion late in that game. I think Jared will be dialed in again Sunday. I think the Lions will score. I think the Rams score a few more.
There you go. We'll get out of here.
Blame me if they lose this.
Hey, that's in the words of DJ Reed, Colton, sometimes that's how it goes on the island.
Yeah, that's how it goes, man. Very noble, man. Shout out. Just hey, he's just going on the island. We'll be back next Wednesday. We appreciate you all. Shout out to our friends over at Sleeper, Kyle, Dog and Pony Show.
Brian. Oh, yeah. Dog and Pony Show is also open Mondays through the new year, through this year. So go check them out on Mondays.
There you go. We will catch you guys next Wednesday. Until then, hit the like button on the stream and subscribe. But we'll catch you guys next week.